Monster Professor.
Welcome to the Monster Professor, a show in which we discuss and explore monsters in literature, myth, film, games, folklore, culture, and beyond. I'm your host, Josh Woods, author, editor, professor, and monster expert, and today I get to talk with Ron Newcomb. Now, he's a filmmaker and a storyteller at heart, and so it will be no surprise to you that I pick his brain on how to get these projects off the ground, whether it's films, as he's done, or comic books, as he's done, or any other type of project that you monster makers out there have in mind for those of you interested in creating fantasy story worlds or science fiction story worlds. Because Ron has a lot of experience, let me run down real quick his bio. He's a director, writer, actor, producer, and he's created The Forge Studios. I'm going to drop the links into the description on this episode, by the way, so you can catch up with him and look into all the projects he's been doing. He's written and directed award-winning short and feature-length independent films. He founded FCF, a network of over 1,800 faith-based filmmakers and film enthusiasts. I pick his brain about that in a little bit. He's one of the founders of the Fantasy Network. It's a streaming fantasy platform. We're going to talk about that. You've got to check that out. He's developed a feature film, The Fellowship, Rise of the Gamers. And that's been, it's been translated and pushed all over the world. Also, he's been into documentaries, Made in the USA, A 30-Day Journey, about the brand Made in the USA and what that means these days. He's been developing his own intellectual property with The Rangers. He's all over the place, and he's essentially an indie filmmaker and indie project renaissance man, and that's not even to mention his four different comic books he's got going. And so as I share in a minute, I get a lot of questions from a lot of you about how in the world do I get my indie project going in this day and age when New York and LA seem to be shut off to so many of us trying to create stories of our own. Well, Ron's the guy to ask about that, so here we go. It's really a pleasure to talk with you, man. And you are a renaissance man in the world of across media platforms. At this point, I will have already told listeners a whole lot, named a whole lot of the projects that you're into. But in short, director, writer, actor, producer of all sorts of stuff. And yeah. Our friend in common, a fantastic director and visionary in his own right, Eric Yeager, kind of connected us. But I also kind of knew you through, I guess the connection was through Legendarium Media, who's great and who I follow. So what's your connection with Legendarium?
Yeah, no, it's funny. It's a good little pass there. So with Legendarium, originally it was a group of fans and gamers with the love of things that are fantasy predominantly and sci-fi as well. They're kind of the same coin, just different sides. They formed a group that they called the Middle Earth Network. And so back then they were looking at considering how to do story and bring story into the fold of the community that they had built. And so I was brought on to that core team to try to help with that, and to try to stand up some video elements. And then Eric actually replaced me in that group right at the transition. It went from a name change from Middle Earth Network over to Legendarium, which it is now. So I'm still affiliated with Legendarium specifically. And then through the Fantasy Network, which is another streaming platform for fantasy and sci-fi content, we partnered up with Legendarium, and so Legendarium is looking to me like the news outlet arm, and then the Fantasy Network is kind of the video and streaming platform.
Yeah, very cool. Let's just jump to the Fantasy Network for a minute, because that's
sure.
that's a fantastic project, and it's one that I don't know how many people quite know about it yet or know about this kind of thing, but I'm really seeing the media of the future kind of going this direction, this kind of subscribing to the particular things that you want as your media. And so tell us a little bit about the idea of the Fantasy Network and how that works. And
happy to. This is my passion. This is where it's at. You had talked about, you know, kind of jokingly that the Renaissance man, but I would say the thread that kind of runs it through is that I'm a storyteller. And so through the Fantasy Network, this really started as a pain point as an independent fantasy content creator, filmmaker, creating content and then trying to get it out there to the masses and all those challenges that comes together. And so we put together a think tank. I'm from the DC area, and that's one of the things we do well. And so we partnered up with around 15 other filmmakers that were at a level. So they were not necessarily new filmmakers. They were all over the world. So we had people in the UK and people up in Canada and, you know, people here, obviously in the States. And it was fantastic. It was 15 of us. And we would just get together like once a quarter with no real agenda other than just trying to help each other create win-wins and try to advance all the good for fantasy independent content, because we loved fantasy. We're fans first. And so we wanted to see more of it. And the studios are taking less risk, coming up with less originality.
Yeah.
And it's understandable why. You know, they lose and it's a major loss. And so that's where indies can come in and fulfill that gap. Well, through that coalition, 2 years later, we came together, a few of us, and officially formed the Fantasy Network. And so if you go to the fantasy.network, this is a network of fantasy and sci-fi content that is streamed. We have a lot of apps, so you can find us on Roku and Apple and Android, be it on your TV or your phone. You can certainly go on the internet and watch us. 80% of our content is free. It's just to get it out there to people. We do have a paid platform, but we have an awesome strategy of what we're getting ready to kind of unfold to bring it out to even garner more content and to get more people involved. Because our differentiating factor is we believe everybody has a story to tell. Everyone's an artist. And they just need an opportunity. And so this is an opportunity to co-create with us and then potentially get your content up on the platform. So we actually have opened up and offered some of the worlds that we created as open IP to create with us freely. So I created a fantasy called The Rangers, and we have this epic fantasy world called Adrasil. And there's a lot of mythos and history with it. And I invite you actually freely that you can create in that world. So you can, you know, write, draw, paint. You don't need to worry about copyright. I'm giving the copyright to people to allow them to create with us. And if you are a filmmaker like us, you can film in the world and submit it to us to be considered to be put on the network. If it's not, then it's awesome. It's great. We'll like it on YouTube, throw it up on our social media for you. But if it's good enough and reaches a certain quality, then you actually get put onto the network and you get to partake in the financial rewards through what the Fantasy Network takes in. So it really is kind of a unique element. It isn't just a passive, hey, I want to watch some fantasy. And this is a way that we, the enthusiasts, the filmmakers, the fans can be empowered to allow more fantasy content and sci-fi content to be created.
Yeah, that's so cool. And this kind of thing would not have been possible in any way that I can conceive of 15 years ago, hell, even 10 years ago. Like, your only option as a filmmaker would be put all that money into a bus ticket to LA and like, right, do your best.
There you go. Right. Yeah.
And it's also cool that, you know, I mean, YouTube changed everything really fast, but it's kind of like this wide open playground. And so like a playground with a bunch of basketball courts, and then there's the NBA of Hollywood, and there's no real in between for somebody who's like good enough to make it on a team, right? But won't get let in by the pros. And this sounds like the perfect kind of, the perfect, I don't know if it's an in-between, it's more like a different path altogether.
Yeah, it really is empowering the fans to be able to become creators themselves, where there are a lot of opportunities out there for content placement, but those decisions are being made in LA, you know, and it's hard for people, particularly independent filmmakers, to get their stuff up on Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, which is the three primary we all like to talk about most because they've been the biggest disruptors. But they're disruptors in distribution, not how they're creating content. They're very traditional in how they're creating. So they're partnering up with people that are going to be able to mitigate their risk. Well, this is, again, where we can step up. We can risk boldly to create cool and new epic content. If you want original fantasy and sci-fi, then, you know, we can all do this together. We can't do this alone. It's going to fail 100%. But if we, the collective, we can come together, there's nothing we can't stop us.
Yeah. And so that kind of leads me to the next question that I know a lot of listeners are wondering, because I've got a lot of listeners who are college students, who have ideas for projects, but no resources, no experience, no real idea how to make those projects come alive. A lot of people who are not associated with college at all, but are writers, they have creative people, they have really cool ideas. And when they come to me like, oh, I've got this book idea, I can help them. I'm a writer. Or like, even with podcasting, it costs me, I think, $0, not counting equipment, to have this podcast so far. But your projects, man, your filmmaking, your comic stuff, I mean, that takes crazy amounts of coordination and serious resources. And so when those writers or their students are like, hey man, I got a film idea, I got a comic book idea, what should I do? I'm kind of like, I have no freaking idea what you do, especially this day and age. But you do. You've got a ton of projects. So any advice for them? Like, if they've got an idea for a film, they've got a screenplay they want to get made, or comic book idea, or video game idea, what in the world, how do you get that going?
Yeah, no, it is kind of the big hairy question out there to figure out. And what I will say is, although I think I can give some guidelines for people to be able to shoot after, what I have found is that most people that I have talked to, each story is unique. And so embracing the fact that it's probably going to be a unique path, but certainly there are some guidelines that you can do. And I would be certainly remiss. Most of us and what we've done on the Fantasy Network has been crowdfunding. And that's definitely through the crowd. But what I will say is crowdfunding has just become really, really hard. Unless it's a physical product, crowdfunding has become difficult, particularly for filmmakers. And there's probably a lot of reasons for that. But board games are crushing it right now on crowdfunding. But films, man, it is hard just to reach, you know, a few thousand dollars, much less trying to raise, you know, $50,000 for a short film or something. Huh.
Do you think it's the fans just like hoping you'll figure it out, and the disconnection to a physical artifact from it, or what in the world?
I think that it's just, we've kind of shot ourselves in the foot. I think that there's been some filmmakers that have yet to complete what they committed to do when they had a successful campaign. And so people have gotten kind of burned on, man, I never received that reward, or I never did this. And I'll admit, I have a campaign right now that I was hoping to be wrapped up, and I'm still working towards, and it's one of my films that I'm still driving towards. So I can appreciate from the filmmaker's lens that hurdle, but I do believe that it's a hurdle from a fan point of view, is that people, they feel like, man, I've given before and I'm not seeing either the quality or the product, or I'm not even receiving something. I've seen a few films that have wiped out and didn't get made altogether, and that hurts the collective.
Yeah.
And that's why I appreciate the crew that we pulled together for the Fantasy Network, traditionally has not been like that. We have one partner, Airstorm Entertainment, that have been doing some really cool fantasy. They have a TV show, The Outpost, that's on the CW that people should check out. And their Mythica series, they did, I believe it's a five part film series, five films. And which you can find on the Fantasy Network as well. But they've been able to kind of use crowdfunding as almost they put the front cost in and then are using it for like post-production almost to get further post-production in. And you can also, it's kind of interesting as a filmmaker, kind of can gauge the how well your story or film project may or may not do based upon what the fans are going to generate behind. But kind of going back and anchoring it to, if I'm a college person, how do I get my stuff made? Crowdfunding is an option. It's just understanding how big of a lift it is, as well as setting your expectation. I had a guy one time that was trying to raise like, you know, $1 million somehow, right? I mean, I try to, in my best way, I tried to encourage him to be like, look, man, you're never going to get that, you know, on crowdfunding. He had no name attached. So, you know, to set clear expectations, you know, and I also think that you can do a lot with a little these days. Look, money is not a problem. It's the problem. But right now that cannot be a hurdle that you allow to sideline you, because year after year will go by and you will do nothing. Now, the Fantasy Network specifically, we have strong visions and plans that if you do a short fantasy or sci-fi project, for instance, you can submit it for distribution on the network. And if we pick it up, you become a Fantasy Network producing partner, which then qualifies you to obtain, to be able to apply for some financial production funds within the network. And so if once you get a project onto the network, you can get some production money from the network, which I think is, again, kind of unique in that effort. And we're always looking to try to help out and get the word out about filmmakers. But I think that you cannot allow the barrier of entry to stop you. You've got to do something. I've also just unfortunately have found it to be true that I've rarely seen it where you can come in with like no money. You know, you're going to have to come up with some way to come up with a little bit of capital to be able to start to get the momentum going. You had mentioned that I'm actually currently doing four comic books. I took four of my screenplays, my film ideas, and turned them into comic books. Well, partly. And I'm going to be doing a crowdfunding around that. And by partly, I mean that I paid for the cover art and two pages of the comic, as well as some sketches of characters from four specific artists. And I had them done professionally so that I can then do the crowdfunding campaign. So it wasn't like I didn't spend any money. You know, I spent several thousand dollars just to get that done. And so, you know, I work a 9-to-5 job. I have a family with four little girls and another one on the way. I totally get the, if you're not a college student, that you're, you know, there's still some financial obligation and considerations, but there's ways to get it made. There's ways to squirrel it away. And you're not an island. I see so many filmmakers out there trying to do this on their own. And I don't know where people got that from. Filmmaking is in itself naturally a artistic collaboration. It's bringing people together. There are people out there that want to help you. Now, granted, you have to find the right partner, right? I have some nightmares of, you know, the wrong partners, but you have to find the right partner. But there are partners out there that are willing to help you. So that's another thing. So the first is consider crowdfunding. The second is assume you're going to have to come up with something, be it a little bit of cash, some concept element to get it going. And third, find the right partner.
That's fantastic advice. And not only that, but a pathway. If like somebody listening to this has, man, I've got a short or could put together enough for a short film to submit to Fantasy Network. So I'll provide the link in the description of this episode, but for now it's thefantasy.network. And then that's where they can find all that information about not only watching and checking out what's there, but submitting their own work.
Absolutely. You can also email me directly, ron@thefantasy.network. You can shoot me an email and I will jump right on it. We are definitely actively looking for content. I'm kind of the chief content officer, if you will. None of us really carry titles because we're all filmmakers at heart, but I've been very actively trying to go out and pursue the original content from out there. And it doesn't need to be exclusive with us either. So that means, let's say you have something from the past that's been on YouTube, or you have some other piece of content that's been elsewhere. We're trying to be a one-stop shop aggregator for content. So someone might come on and say, oh, wow, I've never seen that before, you know, because they didn't come across it on YouTube. And they can go to all things for fantasy and sci-fi. That's where they go, to the Fantasy Network.
Man, that's huge. That's awesome. And you brought up the comic book thing, so I want to get to that, because I got a chance to take a look at a couple of pages of Outlawed Faith, this kind of like futuristic Western. I almost said space cowboy, but it's not space cowboy, really.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, no, it's kind of that. It's definitely trying to go after. You know, we all love Firefly and we all wish it would come back, but Joss Whedon has made it clear it's not coming back. And it's not like that's what I intended to kind of go after. I created an original story, but it definitely is feeding that within me. And I've seen that resonate with others. I kind of did a steampunk diesel punk mashup, and it's kind of Hell on Wheels. You know, if you're familiar with that show, meets Firefly, that's the way I describe it.
Yeah, and you know, when I found out that you had some indie comic projects, I'm like, I want to take a look at it. But I have tempered expectations about the art when I see somebody's indie comic book project, because, you know, a lot of times you end up going, well, you know, you drew this yourself, or your friend did, and you guys, you really tried. But, you know, if I'm hooked on Mike Mignola, then it's going to take a whole lot to get me interested in anybody else's art. And I take a look at this thing, and it is like full on top level, beautiful, professional stuff. And I'm thinking, how in the world did he do this? There's no way he could be this good of an artist too. This would take a lifetime of dedication. But you're saying that's one that you went ahead and decided to invest money in that and making it look like the vision you had in mind. So you hired a pro artist. Is that right?
That's it. And I would even say what I did was, I knew I was going to have to spend some money. I couldn't afford like the Marvel and DC artist, right? But I wanted that level, because I think you're right. On one hand, as an indie artist, I want to be compared to people at my level. You know, that's my internal heart. And when I go and see an indie film, I kind of grade on that curve. But the truth is, the rest of the world does not do that. To your point, you know, you're used to some other artist. That's what you're going to compare it to. And that's what we're up against. That's what we're competing against. Marvel, DC, you know, Image Comics, that's the expectation. That's what the industry is yielding. And so I thought, man, I've got to hit that level. I feel like I'm hitting it with the story. Not only am I one of the writers, but I have a great writing team as well for these four comics. Each of them, their own voice, each of them very unique. But again, you saw Outlawed Faith, the steampunk Western sci-fi. And what I did was I reached out to some guys that they're not at the DC Marvel level in their profession yet, but man, they are skyrocketing up there. And so I jumped in at that level. So they wouldn't cost me the Marvel rates. But so they were very reasonable, but it wasn't free either. To your point, it wasn't like, you know, my cousin doing the artwork. And you know, there's some, well, you know, you kind of have to, there's some sympathy expectation there, you know, and you don't want that. You want it looking strong. And I, I think you're right. Out of all the comics that I have right now, the Outlawed Faith, I mean, he just crushed it. He nailed it. It's exactly what I had in my head. It looks awesome.
Yeah, and that makes such a smooth transition. You said you had these screenplays first, and then you went to the comic, because not only is the comic book kind of the artifact in and of itself that's fun to really cool to look through and read and everything, but it already gives you a storyboard for your film. I was guessing at least that that's one reason why so many comic books kind of transition to films, is because you've already got professional storyboards laid out for you.
Yeah, no, it is a film is a visual medium. And so therefore comics is too, right? The films are just moving. And so exactly, you can see that and you really can see in your mind's eye. You don't even need to, there's not a big leap. You can see the movement and the way the artistry and some of it happens. Right now, if you are a person that has a screenplay and no representation, the likelihood of your script, original script, not based on IP, being made is you're better off playing the lottery. I wish I could say that wasn't true.
Yeah.
I wish that wasn't true, but it is true. And if we know that going into it, then your first stop should be to try to get an agent. That's what you should be working on as a screenwriter. The second thing is you should be getting, you know, doing the festival run to try to get pedigree around that particular script so that you can get an agent.
Yeah.
The agent is the thing you need, and you should have more than just one script. You should try to have at least two. The third option is to develop IP. So IP is intellectual property. And what that does for the studios and the streamers, it allows them to see what the audience will yield from it, and it allows them to mitigate risk. So that's why they're having a hard time creating original content, is because when they risk like that and it wipes out, it can be a big wipeout.
Yeah.
But if they based it upon something, another IP that's done really well, a la Walking Dead, then they can kind of assume there's at least going to be some audience there. And, you know, it's kind of like what I was referring to with crowdfunding, is that by you creating a comic, for instance, this is really going to show me whether or not I have an audience for Outlawed Faith or I don't. And
yeah.
I'll be able to take that if my crowdfunding does well. Imagine that if I'm able to raise, you know, $50,000 and I get 1,000 fans. And then I go to a agent or a studio and try to get the screenplay. It's a different conversation than, I know you never heard of me and I know you never heard of my idea, but you know, will you make my movie? And the answer is likely going to be no.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And it's more and more like that now, I think, because the costs are getting so much for those on the other side of the gatekeepers, whether it's for books in New York City or films in LA. And so they're kind of watching these kind of indie projects to see, can you get fans on your own? Can you make it on your own first before
right.
we then snatch you up? Yeah.
There you go.
So,
yep.
And if we've been talking about like the boots on the ground level kind of production and ideas and how you get these things going. If you don't mind to zoom out a little bit, just talking in general about the world of storytelling and fantasy and the world of storytelling and science fiction. I don't think anything, any other particular genre has that kind of passionate mass appeal that if you're going to, like you said, two sides of the same coin, we can put fantasy and SF together quite easily. So if we do, man, I don't think anything has that kind of appeal. In fact, I think it was Tom Shippey once quoting a top level book publisher saying that the only mainstream genre is fantasy. Everything else is niche genres.
and
there's some truth to that. So what's your take, since you're deep into the fantasy and SF
yeah.
world, like what's your take on that appeal? Why does it appeal
yeah.
so passionately to so many?
Yeah, well, first let me tell you that I am a person that loved Lord of the Rings so much that way before the tours came, a bunch of my buddies hopped on a plane and went to New Zealand. And
that's serious, man.
I said, that is serious, right? I said I would never get a tattoo unless it, you know, actually meant something. And if you know anything about the Lord of the Rings, the actors, they all got a number 9, an elvish 9. And three of my best friends, three of us were part of the crew that went to New Zealand. We all have an elvish letter number 3 on us. I mean, that's how serious I am.
That's
about
funny. Yeah, I taught.
I'm an Uber fan.
I taught a Tolkien literature class in college this recent semester, and not only did some of my students already come in with Tolkien tattoos, but at least one of them got a tattoo during the semester. And I always offer to my students, if you get any class notes tattooed on your arm or face, I give you one bonus point. Expecting never any of them to ever actually follow through on that kind of snarky offer. And yet in the Tolkien class, they actually did.
They actually might. Yeah. Right. No, too funny. No, I mean, we are passionate about it, and it's because something resonates with us. A lot of people know about Joseph Campbell's, you know, the hero's journey, and yeah. That, you know, goes all the way back to the poetics and to antiquity.
Yeah.
And so it's really written, the story, the hero's journey is written on our heart and in our souls. It's written on our DNA. I'm a person of faith and I believe in that, and it's written there for a reason. And so with all the political climate that we find ourselves in, and yet as the world comes together, it recently has never felt more divisive as well. And so it's hard to be so on the nose with things that can be divisive. Whereas fantasy and sci-fi, we're able to, both sides are kind of able to claim it. We're able to go in and talk about certain topics and issues without offending the other. And it actually draws people together. I believe, I can't recall who said it, Tolkien or C.S. Lewis, but it just allows the palate to be more able to consume a theme or a message in the fantasy or sci-fi trappings. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think it's like Undertune. I think it's just a way we're able to consume it. And we all are the hero in our own journey, in our own destiny. And we all love to see stories of hope and redemption. And those are generally the strong themes that a lot of fantasy and sci-fi take on. And so I believe that's why it resonates with us so much, is that we long for better days. And there's some of us that long for the future of what, you know, the science fiction can do for us. And others that long for the days of long since past, that long to have a sword in their hand, which is kind of what I lean towards, you know, where honor meant something and these morals were high and we treated people at a different level than we do now. And so I think that woos people to those specific genres. And what I found is we think we're so unique and there's only a few of us. And really, as we know through the Comic-Con's attendance, is that there's an army, right? There's an army of us. And again, getting it back to the fantasy network, if we just come together, there's nothing we can't do. We don't have to be dependent upon, let's say, the studios to get stuff made or to make stuff.
Yeah, and you're not kidding about desiring a sword in your hand. You even have one in your profile picture, I believe.
Yes, I do.
It's you with the sword. Yeah, and you brought up your faith, and that's something that I admired, you know, for years and years watching Eric Yeager kind of put together his projects. As I'm thinking, man, the number of filmmakers who are open about their Christian faith can't be that many, with some notable exceptions. LA doesn't seem like a very kind of Christian world, and despite the name, you know, Los Angeles, but, you know, he's interested in fantasy too. You are too. And this is obviously an established tradition, Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, for instance, of this link between like fantasy world storytelling and Christian faith. What is that link, do you think?
I think it is the Christ story written on, you know, again, on our souls and our DNA. It's what longs us. It's what woos us. And as we Christians know what that is, but we all have it within us. And so that's why everybody's kind of pulled to it. You know, there's a great organization that if people are interested in filmmaking and screenwriting, they should know about. That's called Act One. And it's based out of LA, and they are making an impact kind of from the inside out by training up people professionally in writing and in producing. And they've also been able to kind of make that connection of faith and story together in a very strong and impactful way that is yielding results now. I mean, we look at shows where we find ourselves in an interesting time where families, I mentioned I have four little girls, and there's not a lot for us to watch on TV. But then suddenly, you know, Hallmark comes out with a TV show. I'm forgetting the name of it right now, written by a gentleman named Brian Bird. It has the name Hope in it. Anyways, it's a, you know, set in kind of the 1800s, and it's very family friendly, and there's overt faith in it. And it's like, I don't know if it's the number one show out there right now, but it's high marks. And there's no expectation that they were going to be on for as long as they are, but they're going into their seventh season now. And I think that is very much showcasing what people are looking for, what they're longing for. And you know, as a Christian filmmaker, I also want to be a great and professional storyteller and filmmaker. Just like if I worked at a fast food shop, I'd be making a great cheeseburger. You know, wouldn't know if you ate it, if it was a Christian cheeseburger or not. It just should be a great cheeseburger because I'm working unto the Lord. And a lot of times as a filmmaker, and when I am a Christian filmmaker, I don't want to be, and I say this with some slowness and caution, but I don't want to be dictated to by my fellow Christians. A lot of times, you know, we can kind of eat our own. And if I write something or do something in one of my film projects that someone else might not perceive as, you know, unto the Lord, then they're going to judge me based upon what that connection is. And I really don't want that judgment.
Yeah.
So I want the freedom to move within it. I know there's some people that would be willing to do a war film, but if you're not going to show the violence of war, in my opinion, then it's probably not the genre you should go into. You're almost doing it a disservice. Now, do we need to glorify it? Absolutely not. I get that there's a wrestling with that needs to occur, but I don't want to be bound by someone else's expectation about my faith.
Yeah. And that's so interesting too, to kind of look at the darker side of things that, you know, anybody familiar with the satanic panic of the 1980s, as I was kind of took, you know, where the fantasy world, particularly in the body of Dungeons and Dragons role-playing game, was under attack. And so we were trying to hide our love for fantasy away from these Christians who were coming after us pitchfork and torch. In fact, friends of mine had their mother like found their D&D books and burned them, to put a stop to this kind of evil. And so it wasn't much later until I realized, hey, these Christians actually are into into fantasy. In fact, Tolkien himself having essentially created the whole fantasy genre. But a big part of that fantasy genre involves monsters. And people listening to the Monster Professor right now might be going, hey, why haven't you guys talked about monsters yet? So how about we talk about some monsters? So let me throw a couple of questions at you here. One, like, what is it about fantasy and even, I would say, a lot of science fiction that makes the monster so necessary. Like it's necessary that our heroes encounter the dragon or the tribe of orcs or the alien kind of creature, dragon-like creature very often. Like, what is it about these genres that necessitate the monster just as much as, say, horror would be? And then two, the question that everybody loves but hates to have to answer, what is your favorite monster of all time?
Yeah, so, you know, it definitely is, as we know, in order for the hero, because almost all heroes have this internal struggle in great stories, and they're not sure they're going to be able to overcome whatever adversity or monster that's before them, and they have to dig deep within themselves to overcome it. And we resonate with that because we know life's like that. Life comes at you hard. It's not easy.
Yeah,
and so in order to overcome that, as big as your monster or creature is as big and as high as your hero must go. And so we want our heroes to sail. And so our creatures and monsters in our stories must be big. And they must be believable. They must be good. Hellboy 2, Guillermo del Toro, I thought wrote one of the best bad guys, Prince Nuada.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That
he was fantastic.
I've ever seen on screen. Not only did he look cool, but he had a believable story where I felt some sympathy for him and kind of thought, man, if I was in his shoes, I might do the same thing. And yet I knew he was wrong and the bad guy, right? And I think it was a clear delineation between what makes a really good, believable, bad person, a bad character, antagonist. And I think sometimes you can be very overtly, you know, like Hitler, right?
Yeah.
It's just evil. But even Hitler didn't think he was evil, right? Or you can have the Prince Nuada character, where there's some, you know, you're not, there's some not clear delineations between it. And yet we know that our hero must even overcome that and have to wrestle with what they're seeing.
Yeah.
My biggest favorite monster. I mean, you know, it's hard not to go back to like your youth and childhood when you see stuff for the first time and it packs you. So, you know, you're seeing like Godzilla from like, so I'm 46. I can go back to the 70s where Godzilla was walking around, you know, in the little suit, and it was kind of hokey, but we all kind of loved it.
Actually, you can't see me right now, but I'm wearing a Godzilla shirt from the suit era.
I mean, you know, the Godzillas now are great, but that particular one touched us. You know, it's hard not to go back to Clash of the Titans, when you had the Cyclops and Medusa, and you had Calibus that was created. It's hard not to flow through, you know, even like stories like the Beastmaster and then Conan.
Oh my
you know,
God, I haven't thought about Beastmaster in so many years.
Yes, right? Yeah. Beastmaster, you know, you had these great you know, these great evil kind of sorceries. You had the bird people, you know, Beastmaster. That was crazy.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick, I would say that I do love what Peter Jackson did with Lord of the Rings and their depiction of the Balrog. And although short in the films, those of us that are also read the books and love the books know how deep and rich that character really is.
Oh, yeah.
And the Balrog to me is so much bigger than what potentially the film depicted, but the way the film depicted them, oh man, they brought it. So I'm going to go with the Balrog.
Yeah, we had to dedicate, that's a good pick, man. We had to dedicate a whole class period to, I think we did anyway, essentially to the Balrogs and their stories. 'Cause I mean, that was what a fantastic way to take the essence of the Christian sense of the demonic kind of fall in the position of demons, and then bring him into Middle Earth, and then Peter Jackson, you know, although went away from the books quite a bit and what the Balrog is like, stayed true to the art that everybody loves of the Balrog, and just made this horrifyingly amazing image and sound come to life.
Yeah, and sound. Yeah, you're right. It all kind of
came together. It was quite epic.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation, man, and I think our listeners are gonna, if not only be entertained, come out more educated about how in the world they can start thinking about a lot of their own projects, about other kind of areas that they can reach out, especially if they're tending towards, say, fantasy and science fiction. But you've got tons of projects we probably haven't even mentioned. Are there any other kinds of projects that you'd like listeners to know about before we close it down?
No, I appreciate that. I do have a family-friendly film. If you are into Lord of the Rings, you will love it. It is definitely meant for the geeky gamer. It's called The Fellowship: Rise of the Gamers, and you can find that on the Fantasy Network. I'd be remiss.
The Fellowship. I get it.
Yes, exactly. There you go. It's also their guild name. So after you watch the film, it even solidifies the naming even more. But that's just a fun, family-friendly gamer film that we did. It was my very first feature film, legitimate one. And so that's up on the Fantasy Network. You definitely know about the comics. I'll be pushing that out, but we've got some big plans for the Fantasy Network. And really that's where I've kind of put all my eggs in that basket right now. I'm actually going out to LA for an extended stay to try to get some other projects extended. But what I would say is, to all the listeners out there, remember two things is that, you know, in the 50s, we kind of shunned Hollywood and chose to disconnect. And that's what we must not do. We must engage because story is powerful and we know that. And two, that you are not alone and you don't need to do this alone. There are people out there willing to help and I'm certainly one of them. So I mentioned my email, but just to give it again, ron@thefantasy.network. I'm happy to help where and how I can.
Well, what more beautiful ending than that right there, man. So thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to talking with you.
That was a lot of fun talking to you too. I appreciate the time.